a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Rough loss for the Rockets last night. If you want to weigh in on that, or what Texans offensive coordinator Nick Haley had to say in his introductory press conference yesterday. There are a couple of tidbits from said press conference that I want to discuss in the next segment that we didn't get into earlier. But, Joe, the Astros pitchers and catchers are at spring training in West Palm Beach, Florida. They acknowledged that Alex Bregman is now a member of the Boston Red Sox. At least Joe Espada did. Dana Brown continued to not say anything, to plead the fifth, essentially. It's not official. You know, we're having internal conversations. I don't know if you're having internal conversations anymore about Bregman, but they definitely are having internal conversations about who plays what, given that Bregman is now gone and that Altuve is rumored to play in the outfield a little bit this year. So I saw this a little bit ago from Chandler Rome. Some young position players are already in camp. Bryce Matthews is going to be their opening day second baseman. Zach DiCenzo is going to get run in left field and right field. Cam Smith will primarily play third, but will get outfield time too. So we'll see a lot of young guys all over the place, and maybe we'll see some of those guys this year, but probably not. The real question is about the outfield. In the outfield without Kyle Tucker, you really do not know who's going to be out there opening day. You got Jake Myers. You got Chaz McCormick. You have Mauricio Dubon. Zach DiCenzo is actually going to have an opportunity to potentially be in the outfield to open up the year. Here's Chaz McCormick yesterday, one of those Astros outfielders, talking about how this outfield is going to prove some people wrong.
Definitely, we want to surprise some people. You know, obviously they think the outfield's not going to offensively do as much, but you know, I think we will. I think we'll have a great outfield.
How are you feeling right now? Dana mentioned he thought you were swinging the bat well.
Hey, dude, that's good. Sorry, I didn't cut out the end of that one there. So he thinks it's going to be very good this year.
We'll see. Thinks it's a surprise some people. I hope so. I mean, it can't surprise us in a negative way. Right?
That's
like
true.
We all have like the lowest of expectations for this team.
That's very true. I think it's impossible to have lower expectations for the outfield this year. So yeah, if you want a half glass full, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, look, my first question is like, where are they all playing? Because Chaz McCormick, I don't love his arm. Obviously, we all know that. No one should. It's not good. So he probably should be your left fielder. And then DiCenzo, like maybe he's in right. And look, he has got some good numbers if you look at it from what he did in his, you know, couple starts and his limited amount of playing time last year. And, you know, Joe Espada has spoken very highly of him so far to this point. But if DiCenzo doesn't win the job, that's where it's like, to me, I don't think it will be surprising at all. I think DiCenzo makes it to where the outfield could be surprising. Like, he could be the wrinkle that actually, like, maybe it's just better than we think it's going to be. That if it's him as your primary left or right fielder with a combination of McCormick, Myers, Dubon, Gamble, Trammell, like all those guys, like maybe they can find something that kind of works. But I have no confidence that that's going to happen.
I don't either. You're really hoping that one of the young guys impresses so much in the next couple of weeks that the Astros say, F it, let's give this guy a shot in May. The thing about Dana Brown, which was fun last year, given all the injuries that they dealt with, Dana Brown was not afraid to just throw guys out there and see what happened. I mean, we saw Joey Loperfido for a little bit of time. We saw Blair Henley come in, come out.
Jake Bloss.
Right. They weren't scared to play young players last year on a team that's obviously done what the Astros have done over the last decade. So I like that side of Dana. Maybe not the biggest fan of him when he speaks. Joe Espada also was asked about the Astros outfield. Here's what he had to say about this unit going into spring training.
I think our players are very aware what the expectations are. And you mentioned Chaz. He knows that he didn't have a good year and has a little chip on his shoulder. You know, he wants to show up and show that he's still the player that we saw in, you know, 22 and 23. So he's going to get an opportunity to show that. But our fans should be excited about our guys. I think we, you know, we're going to see a different club. Our offense is going to be different than what you guys saw last year.
Yeah, worse.
I mean, I know, like Paredes and Walker, yes, like they're built for Minute Maid. Well, that's only half your games are at Minute Maid Park. I guess Globe Life's pretty similar to that, and you'll play in Boston. So, like maybe it's like 90, you know, to 95 games or in similar dimensions of Minute Maid. Like, that's a positive. But, you know, this outfield, the idea that's going to surprise you, the idea that, like, yeah, Chaz knows he didn't have a good year last year. Okay, like, well, what's going to fix it? Now, this, you think back to the approach stuff that Joe Espada talked about the other day. Like, maybe that's part of it. Like, that's the guy who probably should be taking more pitches, I would imagine, instead of just rushing up there to swing at the first thing that he sees. So, like, that could all happen. The other name we haven't mentioned yet, too, is Jacob Melton. Like, that's the one guy that I'm also intrigued by. Because for the last 2 years, Dana Brown has been, you know, vocally unwilling to trade him. So, if you're unwilling to trade this guy, you would think at some point he would come up and make an impact on your roster. If Dana Brown's in love with him so much, like if he was your opening day center fielder and DeZenzo's in a corner and then Myers and McCormick are your third and fourth outfielder, like then I actually do agree with Joe Espada and I do feel better about the outfield because I'd rather watch a young guy like Jacob Melton struggle out there than Jake Myers struggle.
At least with the possibility of upside. Though there is a certain point where you say, okay, maybe this guy needs to go back to the minors. Sure. And there's also always that idea that if you bring a guy up too early that you ruin him forever.
Yeah, and but you know, like, look at Bregman. Like, he's okay. And, you know, and if it does ruin them forever, like, that's fine. And, like,
that's how I feel.
Like, if you know, because then, like, then I don't want you on my team. Like, if you're that soft, like, and you can't handle, like, a little bit of failure, then, like, then you're not cut to be a Major League Baseball player.
That's a good point. Yeah. I saw this with Jared Kelnick up in Seattle. And where's Kelnick now? He was on the Braves. I think he moved to another team.
Actually, I don't even know where he's
right.
At now.
So Kelnick was this guy, massive ego. And in spring training, everyone was super excited about him because he's super cocky. And he looked the part, and they bring him up to the major leagues, and he had a couple of fun moments, but he was god awful, and he was really hard on himself, and eventually, like he got sent back down to the minors, comes up the next year, actually did pretty well for Seattle, but then ultimately they moved him to Atlanta. He dealt with it, he got better through it, but I don't think it's possible to rush someone. That person's confidence, as you said, is going to be the most important trait that determines whether or not a guy who has baseball skills can last in the majors, because it does humble the hell out of everyone. So it will be interesting to see how they handle Melton, because that is, Joe, as you said, the guy Dane has been talking about really the most unprompted. And when he does that, generally, maybe not the last couple of weeks, but in the past, and generally, when he does that, watch out, that guy. You'll probably see him pretty soon.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like to cross-sport it, too, like a little bit like with what happened with Bryce Young this year. Like, he was terrible his rookie year. He's terrible to start the season. They bench him. And then what happens? He comes back, and Bryce Young played great football this year for the Carolina Panthers. And, like, it looks like, again, like they are confident that they have found their franchise quarterback in Bryce Young. Like, a player in baseball specifically – these guys, the best players go through 0 for 25 slumps. Jordan Alvarez goes through those slumps. Like, it's part of it. So, if you bring up Melton and he struggles early and he can't get out of it, well, then he's just not cut out for it. And I'd rather learn that now than, you know, even next offseason when you're banking on him more. But I think that's the hope this offseason is that either McCormick and Myers figured something out in the offseason or the young guys step up. Because I don't want to see Altuve and left that much. I really don't.
I don't either.
I maybe next year when Bryce Matthews is up. Unless Bryce Matthews is incredible this spring training and forces his way to become the everyday second baseman on this roster, then Altuve can play left. But unless that happens, like, I don't really need it that much.
They are going to give him at least the opportunity to play second base in spring training. So that'll be interesting to see how he does there. I want to see these young guys rather quickly. And I would like to see some of these young guys that are playing traditional infield positions down the road. I would not mind seeing them in the outfield. That's really how little I think of it. He's Joe and Paul. AJ's in for Sean behind the glass. 713-780-3776 to call into text. And if you have any spring training thoughts, but you just heard from both Chaz McCormick and Joe Espada on the state of the Astros outfield. They both like it. Yikes. Up next, who has the ultimate say in the Texans when it came to Nick Caley being hired. There are a couple of things I noticed at yesterday's press conference that does make me wonder about their power structure and D'Amico Ryan's relationship with Nick Caserio. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
The Texans introduced Nick Caley as their offensive coordinator with a press conference yesterday. We touched on some of the things that he hit on at the very beginning. I'm not going to put my spin on this offense. I'm going to do what the offense can do. I'm not going to fit a square peg in a round hole. I'm going to run Houston's offense.
That's all you should run.
The kind of stuff that you say to get all the media seals to clap.
Yeah, you know they were eating that up. They were like, oh, there's the headline. Houston's offense.
And I'm being a jackass. But listen, he said all the right things. That does not mean he will do all the right things.
No, I hate the whole, like, yes, you can win a press conference and lose a press conference. But I'm at the point where, like, I really no longer care. Because what is happening in the NFL? Jonathan Gannon's doing fine
in
Arizona.
All right. Yeah.
Nick Sirianni just won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there's Adam Gase, who had, like, the bug eyes and was, like, a disaster. But, like, I'm kind of over this. Even Liam Cohen, like, the Duval thing.
That's what I'm like, Duval? Like, what? Was that really that
Duval.
Bad?
Duval.
AJ, quick on the
every time
with that.
When I hear it, I go back to the answer is yes, that it's that bad.
But, I mean, I don't think it was bad at all. And everyone's going off of that. Like, my God. And yeah, there's been Jim Tomsoulas and Ben McAdoo's and all that. But I think we overreact to these press conferences. He said all the things I wanted to hear, but that doesn't necessarily deserve credit, because I think every coach should say this and every coach should operate this way. You should be matchup and game plan based. You shouldn't be like, this is our identity. Shut up.
Yeah, as long as
it's
you
like
don't do it.
Pronouns these days. Relax.
As long as you don't do what Mike McCarthy did, which was admit to lying to Jerry Jones in his opening press
conference.
Honestly,
I respected him. He's honest.
Yeah. I probably
12 wins years to open up his time with the Cowboys.
I probably wouldn't have been that honest in that moment to admit, as I'm sitting next to Jerry Jones, that I lied to him.
Well, but I mean, again, what is he supposed to do leading up to these interviews? You know what? Like, they probably knew they were going to hire him going into it. That's how a lot of these job interviews go in life. You know, like, you might go into an interview and, yeah, you could blow the guy's socks off, but
yeah,
generally they know who they're going to hire when they interview people.
100%.
They have a finalist picked out, and you're hoping you're that finalist.
Yeah, so yeah, he said all the right things.
He did say all the right things, though, yes.
But what matters most is what happens week one.
Yes, and I think the offensive line is going to determine a lot of that. Nick Caley and D'Amico Ryans were both asked about Cole Popovich sticking around as offensive line coach. Here's what they had to say.
I got a history with Cole, dating back to my time in New England when he was our offensive line coach and I coached the tight end, so I have a really good working relationship and a level of trust with Cole. He's a very good football coach, and I'm excited to go through this process with him.
Cole is our offensive line coach to lead that room, just having one voice to lead it. Feel really strong about that. Cole helped a lot of our young players when it came to developing. He had a really great relationship with a lot of guys, and I think very highly of Cole and what he's able to do. And I think him having a prior relationship with Nick as well, and them being able to work together and them to get hit the ground running instantly, I think that also led to my decision, and I know we'll be better for it.
Okay. What do you think when you hear that?
I like the ending. I like the ending of it. I agree. We've worked together, hit the ground running. All that's good. Developing the young guys? Like, that's what you want to put your stamp on, D'Amico? Like, have you watched Juice Scruggs play football? Have you watched Jared Patterson out there? Have you watched Kenyon Green? Have you watched Blake Fisher? It's hard to hang your hat on developing the young guys when they all sucked last year.
I did a Mystery Science Theater 3000-esque watch-along of that press conference yesterday, and I'm not going to lie, I started zoning out a little bit. Someone in the chat brought up, like, what are you talking about? Teaching the young players? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Specifically talking about the offensive line coach. Cole Popovich sticking around is definitely something to question. From what I understand, he supposedly didn't see eye to eye with Bobby Slowik. And maybe that's one of the reasons that he is still around and Bobby Slowik is gone. The fact that Cole Popovich is from the Patriots and was there with Nick Caserio.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now that Nick Caley comes in, don't you start wondering about who actually made the decision here?
Absolutely.
If there's a pie chart as far as who had the most say in who got hired as offensive coordinator, I understand that D'Amico Ryans might have eventually signed off on Nick Haley or even wanted Nick Haley. Mm-hmm. But the idea that he wanted this more than Nick Caserio wanted this, especially considering they've already interviewed him before, I don't believe that. You know, I think this is a Caserio decision, and hopefully D'Amico and Kelly will work well together. They'll get the most out of each other. But Cole Popovich sticking around and Nick Haley being brought in does make me think that there's a little bit more say coming from the front office than from D'Amico Ryans himself. Whether that's good or bad, we do not know. We're going to have to see the results before we can, I think, make a true determinant on that.
Yeah, and sorry if you said this, the quarterback coach too, Brady's quarterback coach, also coming in as well from New England. So he's also here. So you have all three of those guys here from New England, all with Caserio ties. Yeah, it feels like Nick Caserio is calling the shots.
And
it's like it almost feels like he's like, hey, D'Amico, look, you're a first-time head coach. I'm going to let you bring in your guy. But if it doesn't work and, you know, because your tree is limited, I'm going to have more of a say here because Nick Caserio has been around a lot more people mm-hmm. in this league, whether it's – and even just the, you know, coaches that have left New England that have worked with guys. Like, there's so many Patriots trees and things. Like, there's just so much you can – Caserio will know more than D'Amico. I'm okay with it for the most part.
But I get why some aren't, because I know a lot of people don't want to be Patriots South, and there's a part of me that wonders if they told Nick Haley when he was asked about the offense to say this is going to be Houston's offense, because I imagine the front office, and not talking about Nick Caserio here, I'm talking about Cal McNair, Hannah McNair, they are probably irritated, they would bristle if they're told that they're Patriots South, that they're trying to copy the Patriots. I will always say, like, there's nothing wrong with trying to copy the greatest football dynasty that's ever been, but some people take issue with it when you've tried it and you got Bill O'Brien and you got Jack Easterby.
Yeah, but I do think it's a little bit different, like, with it being positional coaches. You know, like, it's like, you know, it's not,
but it's
the
a coordinator
coach
now too. Yeah. And it's the general manager. Yeah. And it's the offensive line coach. And it's the guy that they just brought in.
Yeah. He I don't even know what his role is with the Texans, but he was Tom Brady's quarterback coach.
Okay.
In New England.
We'll figure that out eventually. But
if I was to say pie chart it, 40% Caserio, 30% D'Amico, 20% McNair's, 10% CJ.
Well, here's D'Amico Ryans when he was asked if CJ had a say in choosing the offensive coordinator.
Nick's talked a little bit about the excitement about working with CJ. Was he involved at all in kind of the consultation of potential OCs and kind of involved in that decision on making, you know, making the decision to bring Nick here?
I had to hire an OC.
What did he say?
I had to hire an OC. Smiling as he said it. To me, that's a no. That's a CJ had no say in this whatsoever. And that was a moment in the press conference where I might be reading too much into it, but I sensed that D'Amico was annoyed that there are some that don't believe he's making all the decisions. There was just a sense that I got. And again, I might be reading way too much into it, but and he was having some fun with that answer. But between that and then there's this moment. This is the last answer of the press conference. This is Nick Haley being asked about his relationship with Nick Caserio.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect. I mean, I came into the league in 15. I was hired by New England, and he was there in New England, and he's always been just a positive, sharp, organized mentor to me. You know, always did a great job leading, and you know, have a high level of respect. Very thorough, and you know, he's just a big, good sounding board as a young coach coming up too, and you know, I have a lot of respect for Nick.
When that question got asked, this was the last question of the press conference, and I 100% read too much into it. And I just want everyone to know that. But I was amused by the look on D'Amico's face as the camera panned away from D'Amico over to Nick Haley.
Did he seem annoyed?
He was like looking dead ahead. And I don't know if he was annoyed, but it was like the kind of face that you see with that meme of Daenerys Targaryen.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes, yes.
And some people are not going to understand that reference. All I will say is he had this smile on his face and looked ahead. And I mean, if you're the head coach of the Houston Texans and the offensive coordinator is being asked about his prior relationship with the general manager, it is human nature to wonder to yourself, even for a split second, what if this guy replaces me?
It has to be.
It has to. And I thought I saw it for a moment on his face. I don't know D'Amico that well, and I'm 100% reading a little bit too much into it. Most of my interactions are with D'Amico are like once a week during football season, you know, on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So just something that went through my head, and it does make me think that this was much more Nick Caserio decision. A couple of those moments you just heard, this was more Nick Caserio decision than a D'Amico Ryan's decision. And whether that's good or bad, that's up to you. That is my gut feeling. That is my hunch, is that this was a Nick Caserio decision more than it was a D'Amico one.
I mean, if you had gut feeling, like, do you think like they're all aligned in every hire they've made? Like, do you think D'Amico Ryan's was Nick Caserio's hire? No. He was hired by the McNairs.
But the way the way Caserio acted in that first press conference. I feel like he loved this.
I think he did too, but like it feels like because of D'Amico's history with the team and how bad the PR had gotten, like,
oh yeah, Caserio's not going to say no to that, especially because they opened up that offseason where Caserio just does like a 30-minute press conference giving long answers, and the McNairs were sitting there and watching him just get peppered with like, so why are you here,
dude?
It was
a funeral.
Yeah.
It was a funeral for himself.
I thought it was a throwing tomatoes at the clown session.
Yeah, and then so like, I feel like the McNairs hired D'Amico. And then it feels like now Caserio's hired the OC. And it doesn't mean they're not in lockstep, but from afar, it doesn't appear like that it totally makes sense. Like, if you're looking at, like, logically, who was going to be the next offensive coordinator from the Texans? It would have been somebody that is connected to the San Francisco 49ers or the Philadelphia Eagles or the Houston Texans when D'Amico was here as a player.
And none of that, right.
And it was none of that.
Right.
Someone who, yes, he's, like, in the McVay, Shanahan, tree, but he's really a Patriots guy.
And D'Amico, you know, in that press conference, he opens it up saying, like, there was a long process looking at the coaches. Did anyone really feel that way? I mean, we heard Chip Kelly's name. Kelly, to me, was the only one who really made sense as a possibility as offensive coordinator. That was mentioned as a possibility as offensive coordinator, as an interview request. Like, he was the only one that made sense. I was cool the Syracuse offensive coordinator got interviewed, but, like, this guy made more sense, just given the ties that he had. But, you know, just thinking about the optics of this, I thought it was very interesting that Nick Caserio was not at that podium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Texans want to make it seem like this was mostly a D'Amico decision. But I think this was mostly a Nick Caserio decision. Does that matter? Probably not. But I think it's worth noting, especially going forward, if there is some sort of split between D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, maybe this is where it would start.
Yeah, but I also think, like, I don't really love the staff is staying. Nicole Popovich, like, makes logical sense of why he's here. He has Patriots ties. It was his name is Jerry Schaplinski.
Schaplinski.
He was the former Tom Brady quarterback coach. He's going to be the Texans senior offensive assistant, it looks like, is his official title. But you kept Gerard Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You kept most of the rest of your staff. You kept, like, we haven't heard of any other changes on the offensive staff. So even Nick Caley is coming in. And besides Cole and then one guy that he brought in, he's working with the crew that Bobby, Nick, and D'Amico put together. It's all kind of strange. Like, and hopefully it works, but the process is odd to me.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. AJ and Frashawn behind the glass. 713-780-3776 to call into text in on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. Up next, the 10-minute drill. The Philadelphia Eagles parade for Super Bowl Licks. Super Bowl 59 is ongoing. Has the city survived? Also, a bleep talker on the Philadelphia Eagles is going after a crowd that I am terrified of, one that could potentially storm the Capitol. Is he going to make it out of this weekend alive after what he did? Stick around.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Eagles Super Bowl parade is in progress. Eagles GM Howie Roseman got quite... This isn't even a raspberry. He just got sculled by a can of beer Did anyone see this? Oh, my goodness.
It looks like
gracious.
A giant bite mark on his forehead almost.
I mean, he got hit right in the middle of the head. And, yeah, he looks, Joe, like he's the Walking Dead, like someone who survived a zombie apocalypse. Someone hit him in the head with the beer. It is clearly the line of either the top of a can of a 12-ounce can of beer or the bottom of a 12-ounce can of beer. Ow! Credit to him, champion. He shook it off. He's still out there. That is going to leave a scar.
Well, he's probably hammered, so he probably doesn't realize how bad it is yet.
I don't know.
I feel like it's one of those where, like, he's going to feel it later.
Do you think Howie Roseman would be hammered?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they all got to be.
I bet that the coach would be. I heard Nick Sirianni was quite tanked after the Super Bowl at the party that the Eagles had. But I don't know. I don't know that Howie Roseman, the front office guy who's best buddies with the owner, is going to get all Philadelphia trashy out there. But he, whatever the case, now he looks like he's gotten in a Philadelphia bar fight.
I mean, at this point, like, then you just have to, like, go all in. I mean, like, you've already got the scar, so you might as well just go all the way and just get hammered with it if you're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to drink the pain away a little bit.
You know? Neosporin?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Rub some vodka on it.
A Band-Aid? Yeah.
It looks like chaos in Philadelphia.
It does.
They were out there at 7 in the morning. 10 deep behind the barrier.
They care. It's a great sports town. They're crazy people, but it's a great sports town. Also of note, C.J. Gardner-Johnson at the parade, who you might know as the person who posted on social media a picture of him confronting Travis Kelce, and then a picture of Travis Kelce holding Kayla Nicole, who has been a subject of mine of late a lot. We'll say Kayla Nicole's got a donk, and strong, powerful, independent woman that she is. And Gardner Johnson suggested maybe he should have stayed with a thick girl. So Swifties, who I believe could storm the Capitol successfully in a way that January 6th wasn't, I guess, quite as successful for certain folks. I think Swifties could pull it off, like an actual coup, even get the army involved or something like that. Swifties, they went to C.J. Gardner Johnson's mother's business, and they bombarded it with negative reviews, a la the way that people here in Houston did that to Steph Curry's wife's barbecue joint, which opened here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a mistake of hers to open up a barbecue joint, period, let alone one in Houston, considering her husband terrorized the Rockets. So, C.J. Gardner-Johnson responded to this at the Eagles parade. He is wearing a t-shirt that says, Swifties can L-I-X, because it's Super Bowl 59,
mm-hmm.
My balls. And I don't think he's talking
Swifties
about football.
Swifties can 59. 59.
In Roman numerals, of course.
Yeah. I'm just saying the number. What else would it mean?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But he ain't afraid of the Swifties.
Yeah.
Yeah, I quick little C.J. Gardner-Johnson search. People are saying him and Kayla Nicole might as well just get together now. Maybe that's the play. Maybe that's what he's doing here.
You know what? And honestly,
it's a great strategy.
If Kayla Nicole finds love with an NFL player, then she doesn't have to pretend to be a sports journalist anymore.
Yeah.
And then I can have all these people that are calling me racist on TikTok because I don't think she's a sports journalist. She's never worked as a sports journalist before.
Yeah, she's not.
She's Travis Kelce's ex. That's her brand. And go big. Go big. Do not go home. Keep on going big. Because I am going to make content yelling about how you're doing it.
But the problem is that she's irrelevant if he retires tomorrow.
Maybe.
She dies.
She's still going to...
Career dies.
As long as he's dating Taylor Swift, she has a brand. So she is a parasite, and I am the parasite of the parasite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my brand is dumping on this chick.
Yes.
So I need it to continue.
Yeah, so Travis Kelce, please don't retire.
Don't retire.
The trickle-down effect for Paul.
I need... It's a very small trickle-down, but I need more TikTok hits. We talked yesterday about how there were rumors the Jaguars and Steelers were talking about a Trevor Lawrence trade. The Jaguars strongly denied that in the last 24 hours. They said there's no chance Trevor Lawrence will be traded and called the possibility ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, duh. I mean, the Steelers can try all they want, but That story seems so illogical when it first came out. It was stunning when I first saw it. I was like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville's going to listen, but then you think about it, and I'm not surprised they denied it twice.
They've denied it. I don't believe it, though. The original report, someone from the Jaguars, not the Steelers, leaked the report of the trade. So someone wanted it to be out there.
Maybe it's pressure on Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Wise up, buddy. Or Liam Cohen won't be saying Duval to you.
Liam Cohen might not be that big of a fan.
That is very possible. And if you were to hire a new head coach and he doesn't like your quarterback.
I've got to be honest. I'm not a big fan of Lawrence either. And yeah, I mean, the guy's inaccurate. That's his big problem. He is an inaccurate quarterback. He sails passes that get picked off a lot. He's got a lot of skills, no doubt about it. But
yeah,
accuracy's hard to improve at this stage of your career.
Yeah, and but would you call Baker Mayfield accurate?
For the most part?
Yeah, I guess he's more accurate than Trevor. And like Liam Cohen's offense worked really well with Baker last year. I mean, yeah, if you're not an accurate quarterback, you're probably going to struggle with, like, overall with like being great. And if they don't think he's going to be great, it would make sense in the idea of moving off of him. I just cannot believe they would do that before Liam Cohen even gets an offseason with him.
Or before they even have a general manager.
Like, yeah.
They don't have a general manager right now. That's the really weird part about this, is that theoretically they're shopping him, but they denied that categorically, as they say. It's been really funny seeing the replies to the Jets posting a thank you to Aaron Rodgers for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
After announcing that it's done. 3 snaps, 1 year. Year 2, head coach fired, issues in the locker room, 5-13, and a bunch of Green Bay Packers.
He has 12 million views on Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and this is where, like, why'd you post this?
Because the Jets want attention by any means necessary.
But what are you thinking?
They're Jan leaving in the Brady Bunch. They're the middle child. Like, no one cares, and honestly, whenever you think about that, you just think to yourself, sure, Jan, sure, the Jets, and I know I'm doing a Brady Bunch reference, this is really dated, but that's what they are. Like, they are just desperate for any attention, and they never can quite get it.
Yeah, it's, I like the corrected version here that I see right away that says, thank you for nothing. That would have been so much funnier if they would have done that. Like, that could have been the real brand. It's like, thank you for spilling all of our secrets on the Pat McAfee show. Thank you for leaving. But instead, this is thank you for everything. Thank you for everything, Aaron Rodgers.
This is a really funny post before we move on to the next segment. It comes from @urinatingtree. The Brett Favre checklist.
Yeah.
Things that Aaron Rodgers has done. Become star with Packers. Check. Win Super Bowl. Check. Keep choking in the playoffs. Check. Hold team hostage. Check. Team drafts replacement, check. Play with the Jets, check. Have highly disappointing tenure with the Jets, check. Rodgers has already gotten to this point on the Brett Favre checklist. Here's now what he needs to do. Play with the Vikings.
Okay, possible.
Send a ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong pick. Ooh. Retire. Steal money from the poor.
Ooh.
He's almost there.
Yeah. The only thing that's missing from this checklist that he won't be able to accomplish is, do you remember when they released, was it Packers Favre on the Madden cover? And then they had to re-release it like a week later because he had just got traded. I can't remember if that was Packers to the Jets or Jets to the Vikings. So that's the only one that Aaron Rodgers will miss. The other ones, I would say, how many of these remaining four are in play? Play for the Vikings. Is that in play?
That one is the one I don't think is in play. The rest are.
What if JJ gets hurt? He's coming off a torn ACL.
If
Sam Darnold signs somewhere else and J.J. McCarthy doesn't look great,
I mean, that all has to happen in like the next couple of weeks. And even then, I don't know that Kevin O'Connell would want to work with Rodgers.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to work with Rodgers.
But I, and also, he doesn't strike me as a send Schmenzer pick guy. I think he's a little smarter than that. Now, maybe he sends it on a Snapchat. I don't know. I think what's more likely is the stealing money from the poor, but doing it in a way where he's selling crystals or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah. Some sort of scam, like, no offense to my Lord and Savior Tom Brady, some of the TB12 stuff, some of the Russell Wilson concussion water stuff.
I could see him stealing from the people who he does ayahuasca from. Just whatever happens there. Like, just like running out with some extra ayahuasca on the way. Just being like, hey, he stole. Doesn't have to be, you know, millions of dollars. It can be just a little bit of money.
That's true. Very true. He's Joe and Paul, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can join me and Joe on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN975. AJ in for Sean behind the glass. Okay. Rockets lost. Are you starting to get concerned that Ime Udoka is saying the same things over and over and over again after every single loss? We'll discuss. Happy Valentine's Day. It's Gallant and George. Stay put.
This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He's Joe, I'm Paul. Happy Valentine's Day. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Somebody sent a picture as they drive to...
Oh, I think it's La Perche.
The La Perche, saying real men spend Valentine's Day at the La Perche.
Great call. That's a great
call.
I'd
have preferred Circa in Vegas, to be honest.
Oh, with the pool?
Yeah.
That would hit well right now. Especially with how cold it is outside.
It probably wouldn't be the most pleasant experience as it gets later in the day, because I do think it's actually cold this time of year in Las Vegas, but that's where I'd prefer to be if I could be anywhere.
Yeah, this is a great time to go to Vegas, honestly, this time of year.
March.
Well, yes, I guess. Actually, this is actually a bad time to go if you're a sports gambling fan.
This week. Because
now there's
week,
literally nothing going on.
There's just college basketball right now.
Yeah. But like March Madness, I haven't done the March Madness trip yet. Like, to be there for the first 2 days.
My friends are trying to get me to go. They have, and I'm not good with peer pressure. They are really, really coming after me. And I'm like, this is too expensive. I can't afford this. And they're saying, yeah, you should do it anyway, then, man. And because they think, like, I love sports gambling. And I mean, mybookie.ag, promo code bet975 and all that. But I don't enjoy gambling on sports because I get too stressed out about not winning.
Yeah.
I don't even like playing blackjack.
What do you do? What do? You gamble when you go to Vegas?
No.
Okay.
No. I just want to drink and go to pool parties.
That's fair.
Right. So I like to go during the summer. So I like to go at different times of the year. But no, I stress out when I do. One time, one of my buddies let me play with his money at blackjack. The dealer was telling me what to do, and I'm just stressing this whole time because I don't want to lose his money. And apparently, I won money. I didn't even know because I was so stressed out the whole time. I was biting on my hands, like it was because I thought I was losing. And the dealer was awesome, and I tipped the dealer afterwards, and I made a little profit for my friend. But I was like, I don't want to do this again. This is too much.
I've only ever played with someone else's money once, like. Two times ago, I think it was, maybe three times ago, when we went to La Berge for a weekend of shows, this drunk guy just came up to me. Like, we were playing next to each other in blackjack, and I was just winning. I won like three hands in a row. He lost all three.
Uh oh.
And he just stood up and he goes, "You're hot right now."
Hell yeah.
Like, okay. And he just started putting whatever I put, an extra $50 on top of it. And I just started playing for both of us.
Oh, wow.
And I would ask him, like, if a tough call came off, I'd be like, what do you want to do here? He goes, your call. I'm like, I don't like doing this, buddy.
I don't either.
I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't either.
But we kept winning. But then we started losing. I was like, okay, I'm out. Like, I can't do this anymore. It was the most stressful I've ever been playing blackjack.
If you ever play, always tip your dealer at the end. Because the dealers generally help you.
Like, yeah.
Especially when you're an idiot. And I'm an idiot, so... That guy was very helpful the last time I played that. That was at Circa way back in the day. He's Joe and Paul. We got AJ in for Sean. 713-780-3776 to call in or text in. Are you concerned that you're hearing the same things over and over from Ime Udoka? Because I'm starting to. So after last night's loss to the Warriors going in to the All-Star break, Ime Udoka benched his starters at the end of this game. The backups made it a two-point game at one point before Steph Curry hit a three, and it was never closer than that, 5 points again. This is what Ime Udoka had to say about the loss after the game. He called out, quote, certain people, end quote.
Could be mentally and physically fried, certain people, certain players. But I don't know. Everybody's in this situation right now. Going into All-Star break, everybody's playing. They played a back-to-back yesterday in Dallas. But they came out with some pace and effort and unselfishness and ball movement. And we didn't. And so, really, I don't know. It can be, I may be right or wrong about that, that our guys are tired. But like I said, everybody's going through it right now. So the lack of competitiveness is not really an excuse. Everybody's dealing with the same things. We're a little injured, obviously, but it's night and day, obviously, seeing the bench come in and play with that pace and the effort and physicality and ball movement, togetherness, unselfishness, all those things.
It's a lot of things that I feel like we hear from Ime a lot, and they're young. I get it. But at a certain point, we shouldn't be hearing this all the time, especially considering they've lost 7 of 9.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's opposite of D'Amico here a little bit. Where like throughout the entire season, D'Amico was very positive that things were going to get better, and Ime instead is now just having to be very honest about what's going wrong with this basketball team. And yeah, it's starting to get concerning. They have to get out. They have to stop this at some point. Like you have to, whether it's effort, energy, like those things are all fixable. Because it's not like they're just like getting killed. Like. They're playing a team that's shooting 60% from three one night, and like they're just getting like run out of the gym unrealistically. What Ime's talking about is effort, energy, pace. Those are all things that are controllable and fixable. So yeah, it's starting to be concerning because Fred VanVleet being out doesn't cause the breakdown of those things, all of them at least.
Right.
Like it's not like they're also having 15 turnovers, 20 turnovers a game, and just playing. Sometimes they are. They're playing extremely sloppy basketball, but yeah, it's starting to get concerning a little bit.
I wonder at what point things change. Maybe coming out of the All-Star break, they will. This is not an indictment on Udoka yet, but at a certain point, it does become one. It's his second year. This is kind of the same sophomore slump I felt like the Texans went through last year where, I mean, D'Amico was always talking about fundamentals and little things. They never got cleaned up.
Yeah, but I think the difference is that
we like both these coaches.
Yeah, I think the difference is like this is why they didn't make a move at the deadline though, is to figure out like what's wrong and what's right with this basketball team. And it's either and you either fit in or you fit out. And unlike the Texans, who are kind of in this like kind of dead spot almost, it feels like with their roster, if you don't fit into what Ime wants to do and his style of basketball and play to his level of effort every single night, you are going to be a trade chip this offseason.
Mm.
So that's where I think it will, in the long term, be okay for Ime in this roster. He's learning who he is in on and who he's out on.
Ime Udoka also talked after last night's loss to the Warriors about what the Rockets have to do better on the other side of the All-Star break, which starts tonight.
I mean, first of all, you have to play with a certain amount of aggression and physicality and effort, or you don't give yourself a chance. And that's what we did, I would say, the first 35, 40, whatever games of the year. We did that and gave ourselves a chance every night. And when we don't do that, you see what the results are lately. And so that alone takes care of some things, but a lot of the same mistakes on both ends of the ball. Lack of communication on defense. Playing in a crowd or selfishness on offense, and whether it's intentional or unintentional, it's wrong. You've got three guys in the paint on you. You got to find your open teammates, and that's something we've been harping, and we see the results when we do it the right way, and that's what the bench unit just came in and did, move the ball, didn't play in the crowd, got wide open looks, and make or miss them.
He sounded so annoyed, but he does it with that tone. It just amuses me. It's so much more disappointing than if you're getting yelled at. Todd, the show brings up Fred VanVleet controls the pace, and Udoka was asked towards the end of the press conference, like, hey, what does Fred VanVleet coming back bring? And he said, like, at first he said, well, hang on, I mean, these things are effort issues. Fred VanVleet will help, but these are effort issues, and he's constantly bringing it up. It's getting a little frustrating hearing that. It's a long season, and they were due for a rough stretch considering how awesome they played in January. But you would think that they would have been able to pull out of it by now.
Yeah, and
the 7 out of 9 they've lost going into the break.
Curious, also, I wish we could sometimes get a little more truth serum from him, like who specifically he's talking about being in the paint with three guys around them and not getting the ball out. I don't know if that's an Alpi thing. Mm-hmm. It could be Alpi, Dylan Brooks. It could be Jalen Green. It could be any of them. Fred will help with some of this stuff. Yes, Jabari being back will help with some of this. Yes, but Alpi and Jalen are supposed to be the guys. And effort is a problem, and they're a huge part of it.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. AJ in for Sean behind the glass. 713-780-3776 to call in and text in. It is Valentine's Day, everybody. You can also chime in on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN975. You can ask GG anything. Final hour of the show. Ooh, doing some experimental things on this program. Has Philadelphia burned down to the ground as they celebrate Super Bowl 59? We can talk about that. We could talk about Nick Cayley's press conference yesterday. More from the Astros at spring training. Everything's on the table. Stick around on a Friday. Friday, got to get down on Friday here with Gallant and George.
ESPN 97.5.